There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, 1207 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Wednesday. Glad to have you here. And as we come on the air this afternoon, I'm going to keep you updated every day. Gas, $86 a gallon. You might be able to find better deals somewhere else, but 86. Well, I didn't see it. I'm just hearing that gas, $86 a gallon as we get started. Actually, you can track what it costs to fill the Ford up. I put some pictures up on the Twitter feed at FM Talk 106.5 on Twitter. I talked about it yesterday. I knew it was coming. We're in the two-swipe world. You know, if you have a bigger tank, I've got the Ford with the 30-plus gallon tank. That would have happened probably just with the 20-something with the prices. Yeah, let's see. I'm not doing math. I'm doing a radio show right now. But it's the old two-swipe day. You know, you swipe the credit card and you pump, 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 and then it click, it's off, it's $100. And then you got to come back and I think I had to put another $27 in it afterwards. And I know there's people that are in this business, because I've heard from y'all before that listen to the show. Can you tell me why they can't be reset? Can you not set it on gallons versus money? I mean, I know there's probably some reason to have some maximum cutoff on this thing, so there's not a pump out there just pumping somewhere. But could we adjust this? Because, you know, with where we are now today with gas prices and going forward, the $100 cutoff limit is just a whole nother thing to do. I mean, advertise that. Say, hey, we're the service station, we're the gas station that doesn't cut off at 100. So just, you know, if y'all can tell me why that is not workable, also let me know on the text line at 343-0106. Coming up in hour number two, Dr. Joe Savage joins us again. His Roads of Hope ministry has been working 3 decades in Ukraine and Moldova, working to get orphans out. Some of those orphans have met their permanent families here in Alabama, but throughout the country, he's been doing God's work for a long time, continues to do it, plus just the nature of what he does. The conversations I've had with him, the on-the-ground information out of Ukraine, and then those people coming into Moldova is something. He's going to tell their stories coming up in the second hour of the show. This hour, it's my buddy Cameron Smith from AL.com and the Triptych Foundation, and lots to talk about with him. Are you seeing anything better than $86 a gallon, or what are you seeing?
I kind of remember that guy from Mobile, Where the Gold At.
Yeah. Like, yes.
That's what I'm having when my wife filled up the Expedition, and it was $118 at Costco.
Yeah, well, yeah, I shopped it. I shopped it last night to make it $127.
I mean, but look, hey, at least a authoritarian thug is not invading my country. So if I'm going to have to deal with that to ban Russian oil and do some other stuff. Okay. That's
so
what you're gonna do.
Yeah, well, I want to talk about that because I've been saying yes to banning Russian oil since, you know, we started the discussion even surfaced. But, you know, there are some people that are, I think, being skeptical, and I think honestly skeptical, which is a good thing. There's also contrary people that are just contrarians, which I'm a bit of a contrarian as well, but sometimes it's contrarian to a fault. But saying that that I must be anti-American because I want to ban Russian oil. You know, this whole narrative is coming out in mainstream conservative sources are talking about it. People are talking to me on the text line. Have I lost my conservative credentials because I want to not take Russian oil into the United States or coal or natural gas?
No, you're a great American. And I look at this very clearly. And this is going to enrage some of your listeners. And you know what?
Prepare yourselves.
Bring it, folks. We should not ever clap for authoritarians, talk about how much we like them, how good of a guy they are, how smart they are. The fact that President Trump normalized that and was like, yeah, I'm going to do this stuff. We don't do that. That's not what we do. And this guy is a thug. Vladimir Putin has invaded a sovereign country. You can tell me that, hey, Ukraine was corrupt and it's not NATO ready. Well, guess what? Soviet bloc countries transitioning to democracy, it's kind of ugly, and working through the corruption while Russia's trying to undermine you is kind of hard. So I do like democracy. I like people governing themselves all over the world, not just kind of here in the U.S. And so if you're saying, well, this isn't our problem, it's not, we should just stick to ourselves and not really get involved here. You remind me of Neville Chamberlain, and that's not a compliment.
Well, and listen, I have isolationist tendencies, they say. I say, you know, maybe I don't call it isolationist. But in this case, that's something that I don't want the responsibility for, is funding Russia at whatever percentage, 4 to 10%. I mean, and then you can turn around. I get all the permutations. I get that China can buy at a discount now. They're 85% of their oil comes from Russia. I get that. Then people turn around. I've talked about this all week. They're like, well, we're going to get it from somewhere else, not good people. And I said, I don't want it from them either. I don't want it from the Iranians. You know, I have a general distaste for the Saudis, but I get the importance of them in the realpolitik. But Venezuela, Maduro, I don't want to. I want to get it from here, or at least as soon as we can get it from here. I had a Texas oil guy on with me yesterday who says we're looking 3 to 6 months to be able to get that production up on our side. Why aren't we making it easier for those producers to get flow in here so we don't have to buy from anybody that makes my stomach churn?
We absolutely should. I mean, conservatives should lose their mind at Joe Biden and his administration talking to Nicolas Maduro and the regime in Venezuela that we've banned because he's a nut job authoritarian too. And so the idea here is that if we're free market conservatives, our money needs to match our values, right? And we like liberty. And so we don't want our dollars flowing to those crazy people. And it's one of the reasons why we do need to wean ourselves ultimately off fossil fuel, because there's too many folks around the world that are just nuts. But I think the issue here is drill, baby, drill. When Elon Musk is telling you get the oil out of the ground, right. You should probably listen.
When the electric car guy is telling y'all to get more fossil fuels out, that's a tell, y'all.
Yeah, and I mean, so the markets work, right? Most people think, well, the United States pulls money out of, or pulls oil out of the ground. No, private companies do. They lease lands, but call it a quarter, federal lands, lease lands from the states. They have privately held lands. But they pull it out of the ground when the prices are high to get the revenue, right? So right now the price signal is saying get it out of the ground. We've got folks that are equipped to do that quite effectively, and we need to do everything we can, not just to get it out of the ground for the U.S. to drop prices here, but it's a commodity. We need to make sure that we've got the LNG exports flying over to Europe. We want to make sure that the world does not have to depend on oil from and gas from Russia. I mean, full stop.
Yeah, and there's the pragmatic side, too, because there's an idealistic side that the left has talked about a bunch on this banning Russian oil. And I actually side with the with the idealistic side. But pragmatically, you lay out the case. Pragmatically, it, number one, will deplete the coffers to some degree for Vladimir Putin. It also will make this shift. This, if there's ever been the time to make the shift to get our European allies buying oil from us and not their, you know, not their neighbor to the east, this, it's today. It was yesterday. It was a week before today.
Yeah, and I've got a piece out across the USA Today network that talks about it's on AL.com. It's the energy piece that I wrote. You got to learn that all oil is not equal. A lot of the refineries around the Gulf Coast, called Pad 3, use heavy crude, sour crude with a high sulfur content. So this is not what we're producing in the U.S. is mostly light sweet crude mm-hmm. that they use for gasoline and stuff like that. The refineries that need to run on the Gulf Coast, a lot of them need heavier sour oil that we're getting from Russia, which we're getting more from Russia because we banned what we were getting from Venezuela. Mexico's in a year or two going to shut down their exports. That's another place we could get it from. And there was this cool pipeline coming from Canada to the Gulf Coast called Keystone XL that would have gotten the right kind of oil to the right kind of refinery more efficiently than we're doing it right now. So, no, the Keystone XL doesn't mean we produce more oil, but we match the right kind of oil with the right kind of refinery, and that's really, really important right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's domestic production, I mean, in other words, producing here or producing on the North American continent that comes into, ends up in our gas tanks or the plastics we use or whatever else, petroleum products. But yes, there's the, because, I mean, people, you get both sides. People say, well, Keystone, all Keystone would do is take, take this Canadian oil and send it all over the world, not here in the United States, but there's still a benefit to it, even if that was true, because there'll be another side that says no, it was all going to go here. Either way, I think it's a lot better than the situation we're in.
Yeah, and I think the idea here that, well, we really don't want to expand our fossil fuel use right now is insane. Our liberal brethren just need to pipe down on this one. They're right about reducing our dependency on fossil fuels, because too many crazy people have fossil fuels and they use those dollars to do insane things. But while we're doing that, right now at the present moment, we have a lot of energy reserves that we can pull out of the ground and send to people who will buy them, employing Americans, to fuel their economies. And they don't have to rely on Russia. We basically become their pipeline instead of Russia. That's really, really good for America. And I get it. I'm an environmentalist. You're an environmentalist. But we can't sort of punch ourselves in the face at a time of crisis, which is what the Europeans did. They clapped their hands and praised themselves for getting off of fossil fuels. But what they really meant was, we're not going to do it here. We're going to just buy it from Russia. And now they're paying the price.
Yeah. One thing before we go to the news too, though, you say I am an environmentalist. I'm an environmentalist that says keep sewage out of the water, right? Yeah, cut down on with scrubbers so we didn't have the acid rain issues we had in the 1980s. Don't pump mercury into our water. Yeah, those kind of things. I'm pretty, you know, but the idea that we're going to wave some wand and change this, you know, question about global warming, whether it's anthropogenic or not, I don't see us supining ourselves to a Vladimir Putin or a Maduro or anybody out there, to the Shahs in Iran for some kind of maybe, right? Some maybe thing that if we didn't have the fossil fuels, then we wouldn't have the global warming. I mean, I'm not sold on that still.
Yeah, and you shouldn't be, because the idea isn't, well, we need to do this just purely ideological reasons. But I mean, I'm telling you, I mean, a future where we're harnessing nuclear energy to power electric transportation and cars that can get where they need to go. You want to talk about a clean environment? That is insanely clean, and we don't need anybody else.
But don't you think, are you worried a little bit about, so, I mean, here we have not only the bombing of the nuclear reactor that made the news, of course, last week, or the shelling there, but then with them cutting off power to the Chernobyl, the cooling system at Chernobyl, and I don't know if it's propaganda or not, that it could lead to a meltdown there. All these stories for nuclear power, and I'm a proponent of nuclear power, and I'm not going to pretend a story isn't happening to serve my purpose, but I'm scared what that's doing to the discussion, because I agree with you. I think we need to absolutely look at more nuclear power in our country going forward. What's going on right now in Ukraine may set that back another decade.
Yeah, I think maybe, but I look at this and actually go the other way, that our problem is that we haven't allowed the right kinds of fuel because we were so afraid that a terrorist might get a hold of it. If you want to look at incredible safety and incredible amounts of power, look at our naval nuclear propulsion program. Mm-hmm. I mean, good grief. They generate the power. The form factors are very small. They obviously have been able to protect highly volatile fuel or fuels that could be weaponized. And my point is, we need to have that level of protection. And if the Navy can do it, we can do it all over the place. We need that kind of energy here in the U.S.
Coming right back, more with Cameron Smith from AL.com and the Triptych Foundation on Midday Mobile. Glad you're here.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 1225, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Thank you for all the notes here on why The pumps are cutting off at 100 because of Visa, MasterCard, Discover. I use the Amex, but let's throw that in there as well. Merchants are liable only for the amount of bad purchases over $100. So there you go. Well, they need to adjust that because the multiple swipes there at the pump. It's a lot going on. All right, continuing our conversation with Cameron Smith, AL.com, and the Triptych Foundation. You know, you and I during the break were talking about the war in Ukraine and how long, you know, what is considered a victory for Russia, what is considered a victory for Ukraine, how long does this last? And you talked about, you said, well, you know, Russia could go nuclear within the confines of Ukraine, right? Using a weapon inside of a tactical nuke, right?
Yep.
Okay. What if, and I think if that happens, it's similar to my question about what happens if knowingly, and that's going to be the question, right? Knowingly shelling and destroying a nuclear facility and having a meltdown or leaving Chernobyl to meltdown, and then you had a cloud, radioactivity spread to Western Europe. It crosses into, let's say it's not actually a missile, but it's they let Chernobyl melt down. They fire on another nuclear plant or something and destroy it. And then that radioactivity goes over a NATO country. Does that kick in Article 5? I mean, that's the one I've been kind of crunching in my head. I don't know. Some people I talked to former Congressman Bradley Byrne on Friday. He said, yes, he thinks that is Article 5 violation. What do you think?
Well, Article 5 is really short. And amongst other things, it just says you'll treat an attack on one as an attack on all. Right. It's in the context of military action. So you could.
Well, it's radioactivity. Argue. If you purposely like shelled a nuclear facility in Ukraine and you had an east to west wind and here goes radioactivity over Romania, Poland, pick your NATO country in the region. Is that an attack? Does that then constitute an attack on that country?
So Sean, this is why Vladimir Putin's going to get what he wants, is because he wants to get the game back together, reassemble the Soviet mm-hmm. bloc countries, get them back. He's been very clear about that. He said, hey, the greatest catastrophe in the world is when the Soviet Union fell. Yeah. He's been very clear about his objectives. We are not real clear about our response other than we don't like it. And so the idea that we're going to like go to, if we're not going to go to war with Russia over invading a sovereign democracy with 40 million people in it, then the idea that this would might trigger, you know, Section 5 of NATO, and okay, now we're gonna now go to head-to-head war. I mean, if we want to, we can. But my question is, okay, let's just take this a step further and be real specific. He takes Ukraine. We decide, well, we're not going to do anything about it. We're just going to be mad and keep sanctioning him. Then he looks over at Estonia and Latvia, and they are, with a combined population a tenth the size of Ukraine, much smaller trading partners. We don't really have any national interest there other than the proximity to Russia. He starts attacking them. Are we then going to say, well, because NATO, we are now going to go to war with Russia, and then do we do anything about Ukraine? I mean, that's the kind of thing, that's the moment that we're in. And so he's clear on what he's going to do. We're sort of like, we don't like it that you're doing this. We think it's wrong and vile, but we don't know if we're willing to fight you over it.
Well, I'm not willing to put, and even at this point, and let's even put in like a Moldova or Transnistria into the mix, not even a NATO member. If he goes into the next country that he could, what if he goes and takes Moldova? I am as anti-Putin as it is, but I'm not wanting to put the first kid from Mobile or Baldwin County in Ukraine fighting Russians. I don't think it's worth risking our people.
Yeah, and the question is, does this get to a point where we end up risking our people? And I mean, this is very clearly the analog to World War II.
Right.
Well, he's getting aggressive. Okay, well, let's placate. He's getting aggressive. Then the question is, well, now what do you do?
Well, and that's the thing. We'll come right back. I want to ask you about that because there's folks that have said that, hey, the war's already on. We're just pretending it isn't. So come back more with Cameron Smith next.
This This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:35, Midday Mobile on this Wednesday, which, by the way, this afternoon, it's not open yet. Mobile Boat Show opens on Friday, but we are positioning the Mobile Command Unit, our studio on wheels. They're inside the convention center for 3 days of the Mobile Boat Show. You know, we do that Guides Corner thing every year, except, well, last year. We'll be back and bigger than ever at the Mobile Boat Show Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Please stop by and see us at the Guides Corner. It's going to be a lot of fun. Got some FM Talk. What else? I got those. I got the floating keychains, like for your boat keys. I got some of those to give out. We got a lot of other goodies, so stop by and see us whatever day or whatever days you stop by the Mobile Boat Show. If you go to Gulf Coast Shows online, just search Mobile Boat Show. And I'll take you to their website. You can pre-purchase tickets there, or you can get them at the door. Go ahead and get them. See us there Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Mobile Boat Show. We'll talk more about that in just a little bit. Continued conversation with my friend Cameron Smith, AL.com, and the Triptych Foundation. And are you one of these people who say the war's already on, we're just not admitting it, that World War III is already happening?
Well, I don't know about World War III. I do know about war with Russia, that in what world... I mean, let me make it real clear to you. Imagine that the United States invades Mexico, saying that we're going to end their drug cartels and government corruption. Then China says, we're going to shut down trade with the U.S. Our economy implodes. The Chinese give Mexicans anti-tank and anti-aircraft munitions and billions of dollars in aid. Are we at war with China? I think most Americans would say, yeah. I mean, China is fully backing, you know, the country that we're invading to do what we need to do. And I think that the Russians, and particularly Vladimir Putin, the people that are calling the shots, absolutely view this as we're at war. They just can't do anything about it right now. Yeah, they don't have the capacity to attack us or do anything serious.
But it is in the vein of not saying it's right, but how many decades, 4 decades, 5 decades of proxy wars, they're not being really wars, right? I mean, we just engage, right, we're back, right, this side, you back that side, and we'll get our teams to go out there and play and see who wins. I mean, so in this case, it's a proxy war with us backing Ukraine and putting the sanctions in, not real war, but you're saying it's the same.
Yeah, I think that the difference here is in the Cold War, we were looking at much more sort of level playing field in terms of military capacity, right? Mm-hmm. That the United States and Russia, that was the arms race. I mean, you'll recall the space race and all the other stuff where we were basically militarily competing with the Soviet Union. Well, what ends up happening, the Soviet Union falls, the other countries break away, and their capacity does not keep up with ours. And so this is not the same as the Cold War in that respect. And yes, the Soviet Union has a lot of nuclear warheads. That is the one, the card that Putin keeps playing.
Yeah, it's one that I think about when I mean, honestly, I'm not saying this for effect. Like last night when I slept for an hour and a half before the tornado warning things hit, this is what I think about when I go to sleep. It's those 6,000 warheads. I'm a child of the 80s. I don't go an hour and not think about it.
Well, and I hear the argument. Nobody is arguing that nuclear war is a good thing. My point is that we have here a KGB thug who has nuclear warheads, who's saying, I'm going to get the gang back together, whether you like it or not. You can do whatever proxy stuff you want, but at the end of the day, I'm going to do what I want. I've got nuclear weapons, and you're not willing to do anything, you know, in direct defiance of what I want. And so he's going to keep creeping and creeping and creeping. And my point is, we do not want the Soviet Union rebuilt. We do not want Russia to be an economic and military power ever again in that way. If Russia does well, I'm fine with that. I want the Russian people to do well, but not in this regime that we have right now that's sort of a, you know, hang on from the old Soviet Union. That we fought, we had the Cold War. It was not a good thing. And incidentally, the people of Ukraine agreed, decided to separate. But that's where we are again. And we shouldn't want to recycle the moment to get back to where we were. And that's my bigger concern, is that where does this stop? And does this end up, if we just sort of pacify, appease, slow walk this, you know, spank Putin every now and then, Do we get to a point where we have an alliance between China and Russia and Venezuela and Iran? And now we're talking about a global war where we got big, big problems. Instead of saying, hey, we're going to stop you right now. We're going to show that we don't, this kind of weirdo encroachment, we're not going to put up with. And that sends a signal to those other guys that, like, hey, if you want to play hardball, it's going to be hard.
Hey, okay. Number one, I don't think Russia can ever come, not in my lifetime, come back into being a normal, you know, a normal nation out there. I mean, I think it shows the ridiculousness of the UN, actually, in some things here. But so they have nothing to lose. The only thing they could do is make alliances. I would agree with other states that I don't believe are of our mindset. But still, I mean, if Russia has nothing to lose here, and you have a power that has nuclear weapons, and I do believe that they're, even inside the Russian military, I think there are people who love, what was Sting's song, if the Russians love their children too. I think there's Russians who love their children too that would try to do everything they could to keep it from happening. But it's not like Putin's, if there's not an off-ramp for him, why not? You know, why is he going to stop at anything? I mean, because he's never coming back from this. He's never going to rebuild his whatever reputation it would be on the world stage. What's going to stop him? What checks him?
That's my point. Is he, sanctions? No.
But that would also, he would, that's why I worry that he would do, I don't think it's a 50-50 shot. I think it's like a 90-10, 10 being the chance he would do this with nuclear weapons. But it's there. It's a thing.
Sure, it is. But I mean, my point is the same as yours, that he's backed himself into a corner. He can keep going, and that's about it. And if the answer is, well, you know, we have these NATO countries, and NATO is now sacrosanct, so if you invade Estonia, we're going to blow you to smithereens. Like, okay. But my point is, I think he's willing to call our bluff. I think he's willing to take Ukraine, and then we'll be like, that was really bad, and we didn't like that. And then he starts looking at Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, and says, you know, I mean, while we're at it, do you really care that much? Do you want to go to war with me and risk nuclear war over these little countries? And that's a tough question to answer. I think a lot of people like you might say, well, no, I don't want to do that. And then basically what we're doing is conceding to an authoritarian tyrant that you can just steamroll democracy as long as you don't blow us up. And that's my concern, is that we deteriorate NATO, that alliance that is the strongest military alliance in the world does not hold, because we end up not defending the little guys. And then, wow, now we're looking at a major power realignment. China, Russia now start to get a little bit scarier, because we don't have that powerful alliance that can hold them at bay.
But I don't think it's fair to say it's an allegiance between my allegiance to Estonia. I think it's my allegiance to the American people, right? It's not that I like Estonia. I do like Estonia more than Russia. I like most things more than Russia. But I love the American people and keeping us safe more than anything, and doing what's in our best interest.
Yeah, me too. I'm there with you. But I think safe is relative at this point. That if this grows, if NATO falls, and not falls like because it gets attacked, but because the smaller nations with smaller militaries don't feel like we have their backs.
Yeah, it becomes a trade group or whatever. It doesn't even...
Yeah. We need the military alliance, because that's very good for American interests. And if that falls for, you know, because we're like, well, we just don't want to risk it, you know, then Putin's getting what he wants over and over and over again. And we're sending the signal that until you blow up another Pearl Harbor, well, we're going to just kind of see what happens. And I think we should be real, real careful of allowing that to happen again.
People want to read more about this. Of course, you've got several pieces we've talked about. Where do they go find this?
You can find me on the USA Today Network. You can Google my stuff there. You can go to al.com/opinion. You can go to @DCameronSmith on Twitter. This is a tough conversation.
Yes, it is.
And there are no easy answers. And so, you know, please, 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 whatever you do, don't act like you know everything, because this is a tough one and a lot of lives are on the line.
Now, and well said. And I want to, you know, as we close out, second that, because so Cameron and I disagree on some points in this, but we're neither of us challenges the other one's love for this country. And that's, you know, that's absolutely one thing. That's one thing out there that you immediately people are having to whatever you say, you're immediately put in a box on that side. And there are some people out there that don't love this country, but that's the people we know. Let's think about this. If somebody is saying something different than your absolute take on the situation, does not mean they don't love this country. They may see it differently, and it's worth debating the issue, but it does not mean that they're immediately not for our country.
Yeah. Amen, man.
There
Amen.
You go. All right. Well, we'll talk next week, if not before.
Sounds good.
All right. There he is, Cameron Smith, AL.com and the Triptych Foundation. Talk with you when we get back. 343-0106. Plus, an update from Dr. Joe Savage is going to join us here a little after 1 o'clock. If he on the air tells us 10% of the stories he's told me off the air, y'all grab some Kleenex, okay? Just do that. Be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:50, FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. I want y'all to say hello to my friend, David McCrary, LCM Motor Cars. We talked to David earlier in the week. He was in South Florida. Were you successful? You went down there for some vehicles.
I was. I wasn't supposed to come home till this afternoon, but I ended up coming home late last night, and we had a good run. I've got a Ram cargo van, which is just something that's untouchable nowadays, and it's actually a diesel engine in it. We got some Expeditions. We got some Equinox small SUV stuff. We got Altimas. I bought a whole bunch of different things that we really needed. And so they all should be here, you know, the next day or so, get them cleaned up and ready to go. Most of them are already frontline ready.
That's great. And then the other question I've been asking you, because I kind of get nervous, right, with what's going on, how's financing?
We just had a young lady come in here with a zero credit score and leave out with a really good interest rate, and she's tickled to death in a really nice car. I mean, the market's still great.
That's awesome.
You've got to come see us and let us see if we can help you.
All right. Give us directions to come see you.
We're at Highway 90 and Plantation Road in Theodore, lcmmotorcars.com. Give us a call, 251-375-0068.
Thank you, David.
Thank you, buddy.
There he is, Dave McCrary, checking in from LCM Motor Cars. Looking at one of the monitors here, let's see, Biden eyes Iran, Venezuela, and Saudi Arabia for oil. Yeah. The Saudi part, and anybody who's been with me over the years of this radio station know that I'm not saying I got a hot take. Nobody else has this take. It's hot. I'm displeased with us having. I understand why we have to play ball with the Saudis. I just don't like it. And people will argue with me. Well, you don't understand. I said, I do understand. They're not my kind of people. But let's add to that list Iran. So we're gonna say no to. Here's the problem. Kids are in school right now. This is the half-assed nature of what's going on here. I'm pro, and it does not mean. I'm a fool and I've fallen for the propaganda and all that. I have been pro banning Russian oil into the country since the conversation started. And do I, you know, the whole argument that it's a tax on the American middle class. It is. It is. It I'll put in another country parlance for you. It sucks. You know, I live it too. I'm not some insulated oligarch in this stuff. It sucks. But I just can't see. I mean, just the idealistic part, let alone we'll get to pragmatism. But the idealistic part, I cannot say it's a good idea to fund Russia to fight Ukrainians that we're funding to fight Russia. And that's a pragmatic side, too. It's a dollars and cents part of it. But say, okay, it's okay, because we'll ban Russian oil because we'll get this Iranian nuke deal done. Then the Iranians will hook us up with, they're going to produce more. What kind of beaten nation syndrome are we living here? And then the idea of Venezuela, although out of all of them, Venezuela would be more my style. If I had to hold my nose for any of them, it'd be Venezuela, because maybe at least there's a chance if we start doing business there, we get some more Yeah, I'll say it. We get some more web around Venezuela, and maybe we can unseat Maduro and put Venezuela back to the first world free country that it was years ago. But all of them are a bad choice. So I got an idea. Now, we had J.R. Young on the show yesterday, and he'll come back on with us. He's been on with me through the years. He's a Texas oil guy. He says that the American production side. So let's make sure I am. So obviously, the slam dunk is, which President Biden will not do, is to say no to Russian oil, no to Iranian oil, maybe to Venezuelan oil, but we'll repackage it. And then we start our, we have an Operation Warp Speed on producing more energy here in the United States. I'm not saying anything that anybody else isn't thinking. But even doing that, so you understand realistically, this guy who does it every day has a company, and you can go back and listen to the podcast. It was 12:30 to 1 on yesterday's show. It really, guys, knows the oil business. That's how he does his, that's how he makes his living. He said we're 3 to 6 months away. He said if we, because he is also not only an expert, he's also a producer. He's got a company. He said it's 3 to 6 months to get these places open. And then he said not having the pipelines is a big issue, too, because now they got to surface haul all the oil production, and which is sloppy and it's slow. And it's, so that's an issue as well. Those things have to, we could be doing that. We could have government green lights to make it easier to do that. You could government green light refinery production here in the States. But there will be a 3 to 6 month window that we're going to have to get oil from places to make you hold your nose. You got to pick which one that is. To me, it's not Iran. Sorry, I feel about the Iranians like I feel about the Russians. I don't have any kind of misconceptions that they're our friends. But you have to do both things at the same time. To go and grovel to the Saudis and OPEC again to increase production so they can save us from ourselves, they can kiss my backside. We take what we have to do to get us to the point, and maybe it's Venezuelan. Maybe it's, you know, what the Saudis will give us. And then at the same time, we're producing more here stateside. If this is not, this is not even energy policy. This is national security policy. You're just, I heard Jeff talking about it. It's a subject we've talked about before. He and I and you and I talked about on the food side, why we do what we do. Right. I come from the agricultural world, you know, in my family. That's, and so, yes, I have a bent towards it, but it is very important to be able to feed ourselves no matter what any other country does. And we better be able to power ourselves no matter what any other country does. And the nice thing is the liberty it gives us is to be able to make decisions like what's happening right now and not having it impact us so drastically. All right. Let's see. So many texts here. You know, other than Jace, my friend Jace stands out to me. He's talking about catalytic converters and the mobile command unit. Jace, I don't appreciate that. It is fine. It's fantastic. I tied a guard dog up underneath the truck, so it's or the van, so it's good. We'll be at the boat show with it, so it's fine. Unnamed texter, it's not a proxy war. This time, real uniform Russian soldiers are pulling the triggers. Right, I agree. What I'm saying, though, is at least it's a one-sided proxy versus, I don't have the, I'm absolutely dazzled. And I was talking to my brother-in-law who's in town from Missouri. His family moved from Ukraine. His grandfather and his grandfather's brother moved from Ukraine during the Russian Revolution. Talked to him about his family back there. Had that conversation last night with him. And I'm such a supporter of the bravery of the Ukrainians, absolutely without a doubt. That doesn't mean I want now my friend's children that are serving our country to go fight there. I haven't seen it yet. You hadn't talked to me. I hadn't moved an inch towards that. IT Jesus, the question is, what is freedom worth? Ask people who have had it taken away, and they'll usually say it's worth everything. Absolutely. And I think that's probably genetically the Ukrainians are brave, because like I like to go back to the siege of Kyiv in 1240 with the Mongols outside the walls. I like to tell that story, but also, you're right. IT Jesus, those people knew totalitarian dictatorship, and now they're seeing it coming for them again. Glenn, come on, Sullivan. We all know you're putting that farm diesel in your road truck. No, my road truck, Glenn, is a gas burner, so I do not have a diesel, and there's no red dye in that tank, brother. I'm not. Although I don't know if they check anybody anymore. I remember my grandfather telling me when I was a kid, be careful. If you do that, they're going to pull you over and take a stick down there and they're going to see the red dye. I don't know if that's still done anymore. Any of y'all got busted for that? But listen, off-road diesel, Glenn, is no bargain right now. All right. Coming right back. Dr. Joe Savage joins us next.